So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Monday is the anniversary of the day Roger first published his famous thesaurus.
Then on Tuesday, we say happy birthday, Mr. Potato Head.
On Wednesday, the extraordinary stories of the child soldiers who fought in the American Civil War.
On Thursday, how King James changed the word of God.
And on Friday, what did spam emails look like in 1978?
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the retrospectors. 10 minutes every weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello, Chica here. So before we get going, let's talk FF1S live at the British Grand Prix. But not there, we will be in a pub watching people there, as is our MO. Yes, it is happening, folks, and you are all invited.
It's on Sunday, the 8th of July, from 1 p.m. in South London Town.
And we'll be in a place that's got a cinema screen, it's got seats, it's got beer.
Oh,
waiting floor. To confirm toilet situation, but yeah. Definitely a cubicle.
Yeah, or corners or something.
So then you get to watch the podcast recorded live, you lucky things. So go to ff1s.com/British-gran and get your tickets. Is that right?
That people? Is right. Okay. I mean, that makes no sense unless you heard a previous episode, but...
It's fine.
Okay.
Oh. A special offer, if you bring your gran, she gets free gin.
So book now for disappointment. And Phil, do you have a final incentive?
It should be nice.
Okay, and Terry, got a threat?
I mean, I tend to find that in rooms that aren't quite full, I get naked. So we probably need to sell every ticket.
I mean,
otherwise.
That could be an incentive.
Or sometimes if the room's quite full, I get naked. I just like to get naked.
Okay.
Naked now.
So that's ff1s.com/British-gran. And now, here's the show. Welcome to For Formula One's Sake, the F1 podcast that brings you all the action from two fascinating hours of carefully managing tyres.
I'm not up for this one.
Welcome to For Formula One's Sake, the F1 podcast that dreams of giving Prince Albert a shoey. Or giving shoey a Prince Albert.
I mean, he couldn't complain, could he?
I think that's in bad taste.
Oh, shoey is in shoe, not as in shoe, mate.
Welcome to For Formula One's Sake, the F1 podcast, where all the presenters have definitely seen the race, despite all having been on holiday.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah.
You'll be surprised how greatly I can bullshit.
Welcome to For Formula One's Sake, the F1 podcast that went all the way to the British Podcast Awards. And we didn't win.
No. It was a nice night, though. And well done, Fight Disciples, for winning Best Sports Podcast.
Also, can I say, the F1 podcast went, it was just you, wasn't it?
No, Terry was there as well.
Really?
Well, I wasn't there, but I can really bullshit.
I'm Chica Reds, and today from the rooftop of Picture House Central in London's glistening West End, yes, it's wet, we're going to talk about the Monaco Grand Prix, where we saw a slow circuit, everyone giving their tyres TLC, and they were big boats. So essentially three laps out of the 78 were actually worth watching, but we are going to fill the time. That is all to come. So joining me is a man who has been trying to outdo me when it comes to celebrity encounters. It is Phil Tromans.
Hello, everyone. Yes, normally Chica, you come in with your stories about how you've met all the celebrities. What is that, Harry Styles?
Yeah.
Well, yesterday I met some pretty big names. Who is a group do you think is the biggest rock group on the planet at the moment?
Oh, the Lemonheads.
It's not Boyzone.
Beatles?
Not far off. I met the Rolling Stones. I shook hands. I talked to all of the Rolling Stones yesterday afternoon.
Why?
Basically, they're on a tour at the moment, the No Filter Tour. And obviously,
is it called No Filter?
It is called the No Filter Tour.
Because we can't use Instagram, we're too old.
As some people might know, I work in the motor industry, and one of the tour sponsors was Jeep. And they said, do you want to come along? And I was like, yeah, okay, that sounds like fun. And it turned out that it was like a full meet and greet ticket.
Whoa.
So I got shepherded backstage with about six other people. We went into this sort of tent where all their dressing rooms are set up, and we stood in this little room with black felt around the walls, and there were spaces on the floor that said their initials and then guest, guest, guest. And they said, stand here. And we stood there, and then in walked the Rolling Stones, who were all very nice, quite old, had very limp handshakes, but were exceedingly pleasant. They said hello, we had a picture taken. We wished them good luck for the show, and then they walked off, and it lasted about 30 seconds.
How did you get this, being a motoring journalist?
Well, just being involved in the motoring industry and being, you know, a bit of a pig cheese.
And alongside him is a man who has been flying a plane. It's Terry Saunders.
So, I went on holiday this weekend, and basically, both ends, the flights were very delayed. And on the way, the flight was about an hour delayed. And just as it was kind of taxiing round to get to the runway, the announcement, the taxi came on and said, I'm sorry, we're going to have to go back to the parking spot, you know, a usable technical term, because somebody has to get off the plane because they've been taken ill or something. It's like, oh God, that's a bit dramatic. And it turns out it wasn't ill. It was like someone had anxiety, was scared of flying.
Wasn't you.
Wasn't me. I'm pretty kip with it these days. And so they had to stop, and some guy had to get off, and he got like the death stare from like 300 people going, we're already delayed. Then there's like another 2 hour delay because we've missed our slot and everything. So everyone's like, you know, staring at the empty seat, and the people with him going, fucking just get him drunk, come on. And if this was British Airways, he'd be pissed by now. Anyway, it was an easy jet flight. So then the captain said, well, because we've got a bit of a wait, any children that want to go and sit in the cockpit, well, you're more than welcome.
I thought they weren't allowed to do that.
Yeah, since 9/11, that's not allowed. But apparently children, less of a threat. And so children queue up to go in, and they all get to sit there and have a little tour. But then on there, because I'm going on holiday, I'm just treating my mum. It's her 60th birthday. So I kind of... Well, I got my wife to kind of be like, say it's my mum's birthday. So we went in. So then we kind of went into the cockpit, had a sit down, had a bit of a joke with the crew. It's a bit like being the Rolling Stones. It's like we're in there for like 30 seconds, said some boring stuff, very limp handshake.
Yeah, hope they had a good show.
Yep. And then came out, and there was just like some really impatient kids waiting there. And I'm like, sorry, dudes. And that was it.
Chica, who have you seen or flown this week?
I've been to Colombia. You may know that because you had a poor man's version of me. It was really fun. Went to this beautiful, sort of isolated Caribbean island. But before you get on the boat, they give you an anti-sickness pill and a bag. So that was looking good, which meant...
They haven't got a lot of hope in there.
Yeah, yeah. So I then threw up for 3 hours, solid,
nice.
Which was kind of ruined the trip as it was. Then got there, and beautiful island, was really excited about sun, you know, crystal clear seas. It then rained solidly for 24 hours, which we tried to sort of make it more exciting by getting a golf buggy to drive around.
That sounds cool.
Yes. However, I haven't driven in 3 years, and so it was the most stressful trip ever. And also, it hasn't got a windscreen, so it's just rain blowing in your face. So that was no good. Then the sun came out.
Nice.
Very excited about that. Put some sun cream on, factor 50, jumped straight in the sea, forgot that you have to wait for it to soak in, severely burnt my bum. And then the last day, we thought, okay, we have to just get some cash out to pay for the Airbnb that we did. Great. So drove the golf buggy to the cash point. There's two on the island. Cash point number one wasn't working. Fine. Went to cash point number two, which was having maintenance done. They said, don't worry, there's another cash point. And they put a map up, and it was 60 miles away on another island. But the rest of it was good.
Okay,
very
this episode
good.
Is brought to you by the Colombian Tourist.
And so we career carelessly into Listener's Corner, accidentally clipping the armco of public opinion and breaking the steering arm of logical analysis. So we asked you what you thought of everything F1, and you replied with Verstappen-like precision. So naturally, most of the conversation is about Monaco. Philip Morby said, "Am I the only person that enjoyed that race? Sure, it wasn't a classic, but it had a bit of everything."
No, it didn't.
Lucas says, "I'm not that negative about the Monaco Grand Prix. The area is beautiful and the third quarter was quite tense because of the top three driving. In one shot, uphill. Verstappen did some overtaking and Gasly and Ocon drove really well." However, Steve Turner said, "Monaco is, and has been for the past three decades, the worst, most overrated race on the calendar. The FIA and Ross Brawn need to realise the circuit layout is more important than front and rear wing regulations for good racing. Compare Melbourne and Monaco to Bahrain, China and Baku." Phil McWilliam said, "Apart from Charlie Clark's brake failure, watching that race was more painful than having root canal surgery without an anaesthetic performed by a dentist with anger issues." Our esteemed readers weren't the only ones bitching about the boring race. Lewis Hamilton, Kimi Raikkonen and Fernando Alonso all agreed. But Ross Brawn said it's naive to expect much more race action in Monaco. He said Monaco is such a special race that it should not be judged by the same criteria as the others.
Okay, right. Well, in that case, I'm looking forward to getting a refund from Sky for that.
For the race you just watched.
All right, okay. Let's come clean. I watched qualifying in the hotel room. Mm-hmm. On the race day, I was in Pompeii, you know, looking at volcano shit and, like, dead bodies. Mm-hmm. And I got back and I was trying to find some kind of TV channel showing it. Now TV, they geo-blocked it and everything. So I found on the YouTube page for the Formula 1. Now, we must admit, Formula 1, the official YouTube channel, has been doing very good work.
It's got
this
a lot
year.
Better.
They do a five-minute highlight of the race. And frankly, that got boring about 4 minutes.
I'll be honest, that really on this occasion, I think we can let you off because you pretty much got the whole race there.
There was a lot of padding in that 5 minutes.
I'm pretty
impressed
they managed to scrape together even 3 minutes.
I mean, 2 minutes was just like looking at the boats.
I mean, Philip and Lucas said they quite liked it. And I mean, if you're really, really into your F1, you could legitimately probably argue that if your idea of excitement is watching people carefully manage their fairly shoddy tyres in order to fit into a particular type of pit strategy that means you maintain your position on track, and then you like watching somebody whose car doesn't work very well for most of the race still win because nobody can overtake him, then yeah, it was good.
To be fair, Phil, I just zoned out when you were saying that.
I mean,
so even
and that's
description...
me just trying to fucking explain why people might like it. I mean, Jesus
I
Christ.
Always think that a good sporting event or a good sporting story, you should be able to make a film from it. You know, think The Mighty Ducks or other sport films that Phil will fill me in on now.
The Mighty Ducks 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Imagine putting that into a film.
Wouldn't even make an advert, would it?
Exactly, it'd be terrible.
It'd be like now, an art house film.
From what I can gather, what happened is that because the tyres were so precarious the whole race.
They were all soft. They had all the softs. They had Magna Soft, Ultra Soft, Mr. Soft.
Stupid Soft.
Lower Soft.
That they weren't driving at full pelt. And if they're not driving at full pelt around Monaco, they're not going to make mistakes. And let's face it, Monaco is only good when someone fucks up.
Yeah, as Verstappen evidenced in qualifying.
Mm. Yes.
Thus proving again that he's the most entertaining driver on the grid.
Well, we'll
Discuss.
Get to him, I'm sure.
Okay.
You know how I feel about that.
So Mike Morby had some thoughts on Williams. Even the drivers were complaining about being a boring race. But please, please, please tell us your thoughts on the spoilt brat, Stroll.
Oh, what did he do this time? Was he just whining the whole time? Is that what happened?
There was quite a bit of that, and he was quite far off the back, and Williams were just generally shit.
But Alan David wanted to contrast Ricciardo and Stroll's performances. He said it is the perfect comparison of a world-class driver and a crap pay-for drive. Just look at the calm, professional way that Ricciardo dealt with his potentially race-ending issues and went on to win, compared to Stroll, who was whining like a little bitch. Although, to be fair, if I had paid $20 million for a car and got a Williams, I'd probably be on the phone to customer service as well.
Good point to end on, because, you know, his daddy didn't pay for a shite Williams, but, you know, that's what
well,
he got.
Did.
Well, yeah, that's what he got.
Evidence suggests otherwise.
Do you remember there was a thing when eBay first got big and someone bought an Xbox box and it turned up and it was a cardboard box? Now, well, the listing says an Xbox box. You just paid $1,000 for it, whatever. And that's kind of what I feel they've got. They've got Williams in, like, a shell of a car. But
I mean, it's officially a Williams.
Yeah.
But it's not an FW14B, is it?
I know that I often am very belittling about skill level in Formula 1 and how, you know, given a chance, I could do it, which I still believe. Now, I have driven around Monaco on a computer game with with full full settings off, you know, proper kind of doing it properly yourself, steering and braking.
Well,
and
was gears. This when you were around at mine?
I've done it several times. Okay. Several different guises over the years.
Several different guises.
I go around many men's houses and play Formula One. And Monaco, right, it's really hard.
It is.
If you're trying to do it properly, even on a game, you've got to really concentrate. And if 1 second you don't concentrate, you're off in the water. Now, if you imagine how hard it really is if you're not just sat there in someone's pants, in someone's room, then it's fine. So the idea that Ricardo had to then talk about his engine problem, drive around it, do like lots of settings, because there's not really a point in the lap when you're not terrified of the barrier. So even just changing a knob on the steering wheel must be pretty precarious. And he can do that for like 60 odd laps of the race. That is impressive. That could almost make like an Apollo 13 kind of film, like Red Buller played by Ed Harris, and he's played by
Tom Hanks.
He swats around with Verstappen like in Big. That'd be good when he becomes an adult. Anyway. It's fascinating, and it's an interesting way that he actually managed to actually do this. It's an amazing story, but watching it, pretty boring.
Yeah, boring as shit.
Ben Oswald has a more general question, and he said, do you guys think the current driver points allocation is off? First place 25 points, second place is 18 points, third 15 points, fourth 12 points, etc. And what would you guys do to fix it?
Firstly, if you're going to say here's a general question and then you make it quite specifically about Formula 1 points...
Well, it's not about Monaco specifically.
No, but like a general question would be, you know, which colour is the earth on a plug socket? Like that's the green.
I mean, that's
one.
Quite specific as well.
Well, someone's been to Colombia.
Just answer the question.
Well, they brought in this point structure because Schumacher was winning everything.
It used to be only the top six would get points, wasn't it?
And then there was I think the gap was bigger, which made it more... A win was worth more. I think Schumacher was winning everything for years. They
and
made
so
the
he was
second
miles
place
ahead.
Less big, so that when he's winning, there's a chance for us to catch up. But that doesn't really make sense. I think they should do away with points altogether.
Right.
Oh, controversial.
Well, you had Bernie's medal system that came in a few years
Bernie's
ago.
Bernie's medalling, yeah.
He wanted gold, silver and bronze, and the most person with the most goals wins in a year. I think it should be more of a system of honour-based system. Mm-hmm. You know, if you go to like a car park in a small village and it says just put a quid in the box if you want to park, you don't have to. And for years Smiths were doing it with newspapers, right? I think it should be like that. I think we should do away with all these timing screens and like recording winners and all this kind of stuff. End of the year, you go to some bloke in the pub who just goes, who won the most races? He goes, I don't know, mate, actually. I didn't watch all of it, but I reckon Vettel did quite well. Great, world champion. Brilliant.
Okay, well, that's one for Ross Brawn to consider. I'd like to see it mixed up a little bit. I mean, they've been talking about doing maybe Saturday races. I'd like to see maybe some points for qualifying, maybe points for fastest lap.
In
track cycling, they have a race where you all go around the track and every two laps, the last person is eliminated. So maybe you do that throughout the season. So if you come last in Australia, that's your season over.
That would be good.
That was kind of the idea with the new qualifying, wasn't it? It was like the slowest on the track go. And
similar.
Work,
I reckon extend that to all the races. So if you have one shitty race and you happen to be the first to crash or your car breaks down, that's it. You're out. You're
done. I think they should have points for best press conference.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem is if there's 21 races in the season and there's 20 drivers and every race one driver is eliminated, Abu Dhabi and Brazil could be quite boring.
Double points, though.
So in other news, it was the Indy 500, no Alonso this year, but there were plenty of ex-Formula One drivers vying for America's biggest motorsport crown, including Alexander Rossi, Takuma Sato, as well as Sebastian Bourdais and Max Chilton. So in the end, the winner was Will Power. That is the Australian driver and not the Psychology of Volition. Did any of us watch it?
Actually, I did.
Did you?
Because I got back from Pompeii and I was flicking through the channels and I found the Indy 500 and I watched, about 10 minutes of it, but it was, you know...
Was it more than watched the Monaco Grand Prix?
Basically, I turned it on and it went, here's a race recap. And I thought, that's a good idea in Formula 1. They should just do a thing that if you just got back from Pompeii, they do a little race recap. It's a very specific feature that Sky should bring in.
Any of you have visited volcanoes today?
Yeah, bingo. It didn't seem as interesting this year. It seemed a bit boring.
It's no Alonso,
better than Monaco.
Yeah.
Ferrari's chief designer Simone Resta is leaving to join Sauber as technical director. This will definitely help dispel the suggestion that Sauber are rapidly becoming another Ferrari junior team. Sauber use Ferrari engines. They have Ferrari sister brand Alfa Romeo as a title sponsor and currently run Ferrari young driver Charles Leclerc.
Nothing to worry about there.
Well, also, there's been no gardening leave. Now, normally in Formula 1, if you leave one team and go to another, you've got to have like 6 months to a year
of
not working.
And they normally do it at the end of the year, don't they?
Yeah, and but seriously, Ferrari have gone, do you know what? We're fine with you going to another team.
Yeah, and he's going like at the end of this month or something.
So. Maybe they need his gardening skills.
Maybe.
But they're completely separate. They run completely separately.
But then we've got Haas and Sauber Alfa Romeo all being like Ferrari B teams. So now there's going to be a kind of who's the B team, who's the C team. It's going to be a rivalry.
It's going to be ripe for satire.
I think the Sauber name is going to disappear.
I mean, you might be right.
I think in a couple of years it'll just be Alfa Romeo.
I mean, they've got a history of being tagged with they were BMW Sauber for a while.
Yeah,
they were probably something else at some point.
It'd be good to get rid of.
Oh yeah, they were, weren't they? Were they Red Bull Sauber? I can't remember what the official name was then.
I can't remember the official name.
Is it Red Bull Sauber?
Anyway. There was definitely heavily sponsored.
Anyway, I mean Alfa Romeo Sauber. The trouble is, while they're Alfa Romeo Sauber, nobody calls them Alfa Romeo Sauber, do they? They just call them Sauber.
Exactly.
So, yeah, they might have to throw Peter Sauber a lot more money.
So it's time for another in our occasional series we call Young Driver Watch. Could we see Nicholas Latifi head to F1? The young Canadian is a race winner in Formula 2 and a development driver at Force India, and his talent could well see him rise to the top tier of single-seater motorsport. Now, which team he could end up at remains unclear, but in unrelated news, his dad has just invested $200 million into McLaren.
Come on. If you want to go, it's almost like they're going, right, well, McLaren, they've gone, right, who do you want to emulate? Do you want to be... We're falling on hard times. Do we want to be Mercedes or Ferrari, you know, or Red Bull even? Or let's look at Williams as our model. So let's go from 90s dominating world champions to, you know, some team that's a bit shit, has a lot of heritage, and someone's dad has put a lot of money into it. Shit.
Are you suggesting that we could see another Canadian stroll onto a Formula One team?
Oh, nice pun. But isn't Latifi's family much richer?
I don't know. Well, I don't know. I mean, Lance Stroll's dad's a billionaire, so he's got a few quid.
But I think Latifi's... I think I read that his mum is in milk and his dad is in some kind of food
production. Cleopatra or something.
It's just like they run all the farms in Canada or something. They're like stupidly rich.
Canada's very big and rural.
There's a lot of farms.
That's got to be lots of farms.
Does all the cows.
Latifi has come out. In fairness, we should say that Latifi has come out and said, no, this isn't what's going on at all. It's got nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, the name of the company, the investment company that his dad used to now become a partner in, you know, he's on the same level as sort of Mansour Oje and all those guys. He's now a partner in McLaren.
Is
and the name
I
of the investment, it's not far off.
Really?
It's basically the name of the company, and I probably should have written it down, but essentially it's the first two letters of his son's three names, including his middle name. It's something like Nadala or something like that. Nicholas David Latifi. And it's like, oh no, it's complete coincidence. it might just as well have been called the Nicholas Latifi F1 Fund or something like that.
It's just a Kickstarter.
So, the trouble is now, I mean, Latifi, he's done all right, but he's not spectacular. He's about 10th in F2 at the moment, I think. And if he does get onto the team, everyone's just going to go, well, he's another Lance Stroll, isn't he?
But surely $200 million is going to help McLaren?
Well, apparently it's just complete coincidence. It's just a sound business investment by his dad.
So tell us how wrong we are. You can email us at wrong@ff1s.com, tweet us at For F1's Sake, or you can find us on Facebook, Instagram and Snapchat. Are we still on that?
No.
So we're For F1's Sake.
I've actually deleted the app, so if you're messaging Snapchat, if you're messaging us, then
we should probably take it off the script.
No,
just leave it on.
I like
leave
it.
It off.
So let's return to the Monaco Grand Prix with our copyrighted, not actually copyrighted, look at the teams and the drivers that are in those teams. So we'll start with Red Bull. Now, despite limited power, I think 7th and 8th gears were off, Ricciardo couldn't do anything wrong, and then he jumped into the Red Bull pool, the things he will do to get a contract. And Verstappen messed up qualifying, but he did a pretty impressive bit of driving, going from 20th to 9th, and this is not very Monaco.
It's interesting because we should talk about Verstappen. He ruined the weekend. Like Red Bull were amazing this weekend. They had the car for Monaco.
Yeah.
A 1-2 was totally nailed on.
Golden opportunity for maximum points.
Mm. And, you know, there's not many races this year where they're going to be definitely the best. And as a corporate entity team, etc., it's pretty despicable for Max to throw it all away.
Yeah, but he's been doing this all season.
I fucking loved it. Because it was the exact same place as a couple of years ago in the race, to the point where if you look at the side-by-side comparison, like the suspension breaks over the curb and then it goes into the wall where he went out of the race a couple of years ago. Formula One social media account put a thing up on Instagram with the side-by-side, and the top comment was just like, stop showing this, you're just making him look bad. It's like, yes. Yes, you are.
I mean, it's one of those things, isn't it, where obviously, I mean, we were talking earlier, you've got to push so hard, especially in qualifying, even if not actually in the race.
We're in the pits. There's tyre changes going on behind us, if you can hear that, it's fine.
It's one of these things where you've in qualifying particularly, you've got to push so hard to get that lap because position is so important in Monaco. But if you push a millimetre too much or you turn into that corner coming out the swimming pool a millimetre early, you wipe the front of your car off. And for the sixth race in a row, Verstappen's thrown it away. I mean, he had at the very worst, barring any mechanical problems, second place at least on a plate. And he fucked it up.
And also, think how exciting that race would have been if Ricciardo was ahead of him and he was going, well, if Ricciardo's got a problem, he's got to let me through. Yeah. And we could have had a bit of argy-bargy and a bit of a crash.
But it did have then the added sort of little frisson of him starting at the back and having to charge through the field.
Which was very impressive in Monaco.
It was, but, I mean, what did he get to? Ninth?
Yeah.
I mean, bearing in mind a few years ago, Alonso got to sixth from the back. I wonder if... I mean, he did a couple of decent overtakes against much slower cars who probably weren't going to fight too much to keep him there because, you know, why would you? He's Max Verstappen, he'll probably clobber you. He did seem a little neutered, but I wonder if he'd been told... In fact, he was told. We heard on the radio where his engineer came over and said, just a little reminder, any future overtakes, try and keep it clean, which was basically saying, do not fucking crash, Max. Because you will be so fired if you crash yet again.
I think he should have a new nickname. A lot of people call him Max Verkrashten or Max Crashstappen. I think we should go for Crash, 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 Crash.
I think that works.
Is his new name. I mean, the thing is, we should talk about his practice crash because the reason he went out is because he's rattled. Ricciardo was quicker than him all weekend. And over the off-season, it seemed like, you know, they're giving Verstappen this mega contract that said basically you're the number one driver, not in name, but we're giving you much more money. Ricciardo's got 1 year left in his contract, he'll probably be gone. And it was expected that he would then just be the better driver because he was on top of Ricciardo last year and he's going to win. And because he's totally screwed up, and then when Ricciardo is ahead of him on every practice session, in the practice he was pushing too hard, and it's like, it's his own fault.
No, it is.
I've always said this about Max Verstappen. And I want you just to both look at me in the eye and admit that I'm right.
He also said he wasn't that good. I mean, he is insanely good. He's just...
He's not that good.
He is insanely good. It's just that his mind's not there. His talent's unbelievable. I think, you know, Hamilton and Alonso levels of talent. He just hasn't quite got his mind on it.
He's got the teenage thing. I don't know if he's a teenager.
He's basically still a teenager, yeah.
He's just trying to prove himself. In every race, he tries to prove himself and he crashes.
And he should, and you're right, he should have sorted that out by now. This is, what, his third season in F1?
Yeah, exactly.
He should have nailed it down by now, and it's to his detriment that he hasn't. But I still maintain that when he does, and I think he will, he's going to be exceedingly good.
But now people are thinking he won't. A few people are saying he might not get over this.
Well,
and I'm there going, ooh, told you.
He's going to have to do something. I mean, whether he just needs a sports psychologist to sort him out.
So let's go back to the winner, Ricciardo.
Oh, yeah, he was there as well.
What did you think when he said about not having enough power? Did you think that could be it?
I thought he was fucked. Yeah, because it was quite early in the race, was it? Like 20 laps in or something?
But wouldn't Monaco work in his favour because it's not easy to overtake?
Yeah, totally.
Would he have been able to do that at another circuit?
No, I think almost every other circuit he'd have just been
not a chance in
taken
hell.
Over on the straight.
So, I mean, I didn't actually check what it was that was wrong with it. Was it his electrical system had gone?
It was the ERS. The K unit.
Oh, the NGU.
The K.
The K.
McCook.
The ketamine.
He hadn't had enough ketamine.
He was in a K-hole and he was not coping well. He
Any
was
other
all
circuit.
Spacey and being like, I don't know who you are.
I mean, essentially that means you're 160 horsepower down, which is, you know, a reasonably potent executive saloon.
Imagine turning up to a horse race and not having 160 horses that you've been contracted to bring along.
Right.
Winning would be difficult.
Or a restaurant in France.
Okay, Mercedes. So Hamilton moaned about his tyres a lot, and I don't think I saw Bottas at all during the race. The race was mainly about the war between the super softs versus ultra softs. Hamilton said that Canada is more suited to Mercedes. Will he be throwing himself in a Mercedes swimming pool?
I mean, Mercedes don't have swimming pools. No. They just have big holes in the ground full of tools and equipment, because why would you waste that space? It's very efficient. But Pirelli have opened themselves up for criticism by having tyres called hyper soft and ultra soft, and no, really, this is the softest one. And then one of those tyres can last like 50 laps around Monaco, you're like, well, this tyre's pretty hard.
Well, they said it would, and then it turned out that it didn't at all. Well, that was half the problem, is that they said, you'd be able to do the whole race on one of these tyres, and then they set off and it turned out that they didn't. And because everybody wanted to do a one-stop strategy, and then suddenly it turned out that was actually going to be super difficult, everyone was tiptoeing around so as not to knacker their tyres, because they didn't want to be the first to break and do two stops and then lose track position and not be able to get past. As we've discussed with Ricciardo, it's very difficult even if your car's shite.
But this will be a one-off. This won't happen
Will it though? I mean, a one-off annual tradition every year, one-off, but it's just...
Much celebrated.
It's just boring.
Yeah, it was not Pirelli's finest moment, not racing's finest moment.
Okay, Ferrari. Vettel couldn't actually catch up with Ricciardo, despite everything, and Ricciardo hassled Hamilton for a bit, but even he called it a boring race. So just when you thought things couldn't get any worse, Hugh Grant was on the guest list.
That was a thing.
He looks old, doesn't he?
There were a lot of shitty celebrities at the race. Tom Brady was there.
He's
an American man.
The really tall guy.
He was I saw him on a thing on Channel 4 or Sky or something. He was wearing all white and throwing a football at Dan Ricciardo on a boat. So I assume he's an American footballer.
I think it was the guy that Channel 4 they went up to him and said, "We don't know who he is," and then started trying to interview him despite the fact they didn't know who he was.
That's always fun, isn't it?
They had Bella Hadid, the supermodel, who was there. She
Bella
gave a lot
Enberg,
of insight about...
Who used to work with Russ Abbott.
Yes.
She was there. Oh, she's dead.
William, so predictably they had a disappointing weekend, but their disappointing moments provided, I would say, a majority of the race entertainment. Stroll hit Ericsson and then got a puncture, and Sorokin got penalised for not getting his wheels in on time. I thought they might do a bit better after qualifying.
Really?
That was Williams. Always
the optimist. Hopeful, yeah. Why didn't he get his wheels in on time? What does that mean? Wow.
In their first 3 minutes, wasn't it?
Something, when they're on the grid, they have to have their wheels on and be ready to go within 3 minutes of them setting off on the formulation lap or something like that.
And they just didn't have them on in time,
and so they got a penalty for that.
They're waiting for the check to clear.
Then he came into the pit lane for serving his penalty for having done that, and they didn't wait the full 10 seconds or something, and I think he got another penalty for that. It was just another catalogue of errors from Williams.
That's
and then,
really unfair, because none of them were his problem.
No,
his fault.
But nevertheless, that is the way it works. You could argue that they should be docked some of the hundreds of points they've got this season. But no, that wouldn't work either. But when you were looking at the screen partway through the race, it was sort of, you know, we were watching everybody trundle around in formation. And it was like, you know, plus 1 second, plus 2 seconds, plus 1 second, plus 2 seconds. Then you go down the bottom, and in relation to the drivers in front of them, it was like Stroll, plus 58 seconds. And then Sorokin another minute behind him.
He's
I mean,
there,
they were so far off the
measuring
back.
Sorokin in like hours and days.
I mean, yeah.
But it's Tuesday. They should
have just stopped and saved themselves.
I know.
It was...
I mean, that's their whole year.
I don't know what else we can say about Williams, really. I mean,
look,
what else
with
is
the Williams,
there to say?
The thing with the Williams story is that they've had their fall from grace. They when the Mercedes new engine, this new engine formula came in, they were like getting podiums. They were third in the championship. So they were doing really well for like a year or two. And then they've just declined and declined. I think they've just fired their head aerodynamicist.
They have. I saw that today, yeah. They've fired a couple of guys, haven't they? There was another guy who went a couple of weeks.
Frank Williams.
Yeah, no, he's still around.
Edward,
who's a man. He's gone as well.
Edward,
yeah.
The film?
Yeah, that's right.
They've got a film on contract.
A terrible
Edward
film
Scissorhands, Johnny
I mean,
Bravo.
He made such terrible films that you could, you could have seen that he wouldn't be that good at running the team. But
Donnie Brasco.
Yeah.
The Godfather.
Okay.
Taxi Driver.
This has gone off track.
Force India. Ocon started and he finished in sixth, and he was actually faster than anyone expected. Perez had a rubbish race, but for once it wasn't because of unprovoked anger, but it was because of a pit stop cocker. But Ocon was actually putting pressure on Bottas.
No, that's true, actually. No, didn't he make up like 45 seconds or something ridiculous? Mm. And he was... Well, this is, everyone was pooling around, looking after their tyres. And for whatever reason, Ocon had pitted for reasons. And he had new tyres on. And he made up an inordinate amount of time. And then couldn't get past because Monaco, thus rendering it all entirely pointless and shitty.
But if it wasn't, he could have ended up
but it was.
Top five?
Oh, if it wasn't, he could have won by a couple of days.
You reckon?
There's just something wrong with... like. Because Formula 1 used to be a thing where there are two races on the calendar that are the outliers. You'd have Monaco and Monza. So Monza, you'd have no downforce because there's no corners, basically. It's just a runway. And Monaco, there's no straight. It's just corners. So they build cars around these two tracks, and they'd actually have a special car for Monaco and a special car for Monza. And now we've got this world where they go, well, we've got this car. It's good for motor races, but... frankly, we're not going to bother with Monaco or Monza. We'll just let Mercedes or Red Bull win, whatever. And this is a problem. All the talk of budget caps and, you know, homodulisation and all the other words I can't say. It's just, we should have a special dispensation. They should scrap all the rules for Monaco and just, you know they had the wacky car go around Spa the other week?
Oh, the fully de-restricted.
Yeah, with no rules or anything. Yeah. It broke all the lap records. They should say, in Monaco and Monza, they should go, right, rules are off.
You can have a special budget for this.
You can burn your oil, you can have city flaps, you can do whatever you want, just go for it. And then this car will be illegal at the next race.
That would be amazing. Some Monaco specials. Mm. Yeah, not Monaco every now special. And again, Adrian Newey designed something for Gran Turismo and it looks ridiculous. One of those for Monaco would be amazing.
Hashtag Monaco special.
Let's get this trending, Charlie Watts.
Charlie Watts? The drummer from the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, well, he could maybe make it happen.
I mean, he's got a lot of money.
Yeah.
I bet Charlie Watts. He probably is listening. I was wearing my FF1S t-shirt when I met them.
Really?
Yeah. I should get the picture through in about 6 weeks.
Because they have to vet. Post it.
You can't, well, you can't take your phones in. You can't take your own pictures with the Rolling Stones. So they had an official photographer take a picture of us. And then in 6 weeks' time, after they've personally vetted all the pictures, they'll send us a digital copy.
I had to
sign a thing saying I will not share on social media.
I really hope when you get your copy, they blurred out the logo on the t-shirt.
Or they put a Missed Apex logo on.
Okay, so Hayes. So in terms of poor entertainment value, Hayes came home definitely in first place. They didn't do much, and the only point I really enjoyed was when Grosjean slagged off Magnussen. So would you say that Hayes are no longer the best of the worst?
Well, it's Monaco, isn't it? It doesn't fucking matter. You know, they'll be back to next. It's just, we're just clutching at straws. Let's just do the next three teams in one. Let's just say,
okay,
and the final teams, the colour grey.
All right, well, Renault. They finished with two cars in the points.
That's right.
Good tyre tactic with Hülkenberg, which was essentially leave him out until someone remembers he needs new tyres. And Sainz got a bit pissed off when the team told him to move out of the way for the Hulk in order to take on Gasly. He then lost the place to Verstappen.
Yeah, Sainz was notable for being overtaken.
Mm. He was a bit grumpy, wasn't he?
Mm. He was.
Toro Rosso. Hartley, mate, what have you been doing to deserve this? He got a 5-second grid penalty for pit lane speeding. Then Leclerc hit him on the rear, which meant that he had to hang up his helmet, pull his fingers through his luscious locks, and call it a day. Now, Gasly, however, came home in the points, which was in his first ever Monaco Grand Prix. It was, however, mainly because Alonso was off.
Hartley hasn't got his luscious locks anymore, has he?
He has.
He cut his hair, but it's still longer than the average Formula 1 driver, but it's not as long as his...
I mean, the fact that that's the major thing I've picked out of that report. Yeah, I mean, the accident with Leclerc was a little bit scary, actually. Did you see the replay of that?
It was quite
terrifying. Leclerc smashed into the back of him.
That made
he hit the brake pedal, and then you just see a puff of smoke as his front brake discs explode, and he can't slow down. It was a bit unfortunate, but, I mean, at this rate, not entirely through his own fault, but partly, I can't see Hartley sticking around too long.
Do you know
when they drop Verstappen back down to Toro Rosso, where's he going to go?
I went there.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, well done, Gasly.
Let's push on to Sauber. Leclerc had a brake failure and Ericsson had not a bad race. He came home 11th, which, is that his best result of the season? Maybe. This is not a very well-researched...
No, he got points in one race. Because we were talking about how he got points.
Yeah.
My bad.
Oh, he's back to not being that good again. But.
Well, it's his best result in a little while. So both drivers blame being stuck behind Brendan Hartley for their bad performance. Is that true?
I mean, Leclerc was stuck into Brendan Hartley.
He got stuck right in.
Yeah. I mean, it's Sauber. I mean, they don't need to blame anyone for their bad performance. It's a Sauber.
There
they
was
just come
a
to
lot,
the press
there
and say, oh, I was in a Sauber.
There was a lot of talk on the build-up about how he's like a local boy. Leclerc.
Of course, he's Monegasque. Leclerc.
He's Monegasque. He's from Monaco, as opposed to all the other drivers who just live there for tax reasons. He was born there for tax reasons. It's like, it's just, it doesn't feel like the best place to be proud of being from. It's like, I'm just corrupt.
Okay, McLaren. So Alonso looked like he might have another promising but not great weekend. Then he had a gearbox issue and he had to retire. Van Dorn chose the wrong tyres and then he had badly timed pit stops.
I mean, you can't help but wonder that Alonso should have done the Indy 500 again. Really.
I would have been a lot more interested in that weekend if Alonso was doing the Indy 500 again. He said beforehand that he was looking forward to going back to Monaco. I don't know if he still thinks that now.
They're going to lose it. He's not going to be there next year.
I hate Monaco so much.
But let's just talk Alonso can't be there next year, can he?
We say this every year.
But I think all the promise built on, like, if we get Renault, we're going to be up there with the third place, blah, blah, blah. There's nothing. I mean, but then again, no other team will have him. So this is Alonso's last year in Formula 1, isn't it?
It could be.
I think it is.
Full-time. Well, he's already doing full-time wacky races, but
I think it's sad.
I don't know.
We predicted this last year, so...
Yeah, but this year I'm saying it was.
He's already won Monaco, hasn't he? He's won Monaco before.
He's won Monaco,
he?
Yeah.
Okay, so he doesn't need to do it for his triple crown.
Exactly.
Might as well just sack it off again next year.
All of which leads us to the standings with Terry Saunders.
Right, well, as we've talked about, the Monaco Grand Prix, we may have mentioned, was quite boring. So I'm trying to work out, for the driver standings, boring things. So, in first place in the championship is Lewis having to do the washing up. Sebastian Battery Low is second. Daniel GPDR email Ricardo.
Oh, God.
GPDR Ricardo emails is coming out the rear. Valtteri went ages for a Bottas, then two come at once. And then Kimi waiting room. Max Verstappen is in sixth. And flight delay Alonso. I'm very acutely aware of that one this weekend. Is in seventh place. Nico on Holdenberg. And in ninth place, Carlos sock pairing. 10th is Kevin's Doctor's Magazines are always out of date, aren't they? And in 11th place is Paint Dry Gasly. Screen Time Perez is 12th. Existential Nothingness Ocon is 13th. And Charles Leclerc, that's a good one. Charles Leclerc is 14th. Stoffel Roffel 15th, which is getting quite boring because he is not charismatic or very good. Lance Slow Internet, Monaco Ericsson, and coming out the rear, Brendan having to say what for the third time, but you still haven't heard what they said, so you just say uh-huh. And the teams. So you may have heard in the news that the new Thames link, which I've been using because it goes to near my house,
don't get me started,
is apparently quite bad.
It's awful.
And they're talking about nationalising all the rails, and I happened to read this while sat on a train, so I thought, well, what if instead of nationalising they got some of the Formula 1 teams to run the trains? What would these services be like? Well, in first place, Mercedes. It would be a very efficient train service, but the drivers would moan a lot on the tannoy. Second place, there would be Ferrari. It would be a great service, but there'd be zero announcements. It's nothing, nothing at all. Third place, Red Bull, would be a super fast train, but one would get cancelled. Renault, next year the time trial would be great. McLaren would just be Southern Rail. Force India would just be hundreds of people clinging on the outside of the train. Toro Rosso would be Thomas the Tank Engine, but with Gasly's face. Haas would be a goods train. It's miles long, then halfway through it'd just be Ericsson smashed into it. Sauber would be that train you see covered in graffiti on the sidings near the station you feel quite sad for. And Williams would just be a steam train used for films and weddings only. Thank you.
So now it's time for my quiz.
Chicka quiz, let me quiz a chicka quiz.
And this one is called, based on Monaco, how slow can you go?
How slow can you go?
So, question one. Who got the slowest lap this year?
This year?
What, this
Monaco?
Year's Monaco.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Sirokin. Oh, no. I've got it. Can I answer again?
Hamilton.
No.
Hartley.
No, it was Charles Leclerc.
Oh, he went by with his brakes. Oh, okay, good answer.
That's a pretty slow lap because he crashed halfway around it. He still hasn't finished it.
Okay, well, anyway, question two. Which corner is the slowest on the circuit?
Lowe's hairpin.
Sandoval.
So the answer number two was the Fairpoint hairpin.
Fairmont hairpin.
The Fairpoint convention.
Question three. Who had the slowest pit stop?
I'm going to go for...
Ocon.
Sirokin.
No, Perez.
Well, you're both wrong. Oh. It's Lance Stroll, whose pit stop was 33.887
seconds. Oh, that is a lot of
Monaco. Okay, question four. The slowest winning speed at Monaco was in 1950, which was 61 miles per hour. Who won that?
What year was it, sorry, 1950?
Fangio.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know what bloody year it was.
So that's question five. How many times was the word slow used in the post-race press conference?
Oh, my God.
14.
36.
I think it's a lot less than you thought.
One.
None. Never used.
Four.
Oh, yeah.
And who said them all?
Hamilton.
Alonso.
Daniel Ricciardo. Yes.
Oh.
Okay, so the scores are, at the end of that, Phil one, Terry two.
Did I get two?
Yeah, I'm not sure how. That's what Matt says.
Well done, Terry.
Loser.
Okay.
The race.
So now it's time for the State of F1 with Terry Saunders.
Monaco is glamorous, it's historic, and after the Grid Girl Massacre, it's the only place you can get a bit of tit around here. Am I right, lads? Right. It's also...
this is going well for the female listenership.
It's also really boring. Yes, cars threading through the narrow streets is amazing, but like most amazing things, if it looks easy, it's boring. As an aside, there was a thing in the news today about David Copperfield, the magician, got sued by someone who was volunteered for one of his tricks and said he got injured. And apparently what happened is you got people from the audience and they go on stage and then in no time whatsoever they'd appear on the other side of the stage in some kind of magic trick and everyone went, oh my God, how did you get there really quick? Oh, it's like magic. And apparently what happened is they made people like run through all the backstage area and through the kitchen and like all these volunteers were going, run, quick, quick, and this guy fell over and hit his head and then sued him, but it's fine. Anyway, so it's a bit like that. That's what Monaco's like, you know. It's like, unless you see someone falling over and hitting their head, then it's just looks easy. And as we discussed earlier, not easy. I'm getting to a point, don't worry. Monaco is what it is. Talk of doing it backwards, adding a second level, or extending it into the sea will just fall on deaf ears, because people don't want to change the track layout. It's like a legacy historic layout. So what do we do? Well, don't worry, I have a solution. This weekend, I was mainly gently pissed in Italy, like the Italians. And one night, I was idly watching TV in a hotel, and they were showing an Italian game show called Caduta Libera, translated as Freefall. In this game, a circle of contestants all try and solve anagrams in a face-off with another contestant. The loser then has to take off their glasses, if they're wearing any, and the audience all hold out their arms outwards and wiggle and go... ooh. And a trapdoor opens below the contestant who falls through into the floor, and then there's lots of slow-mo replays. You can probably see where I'm going with this. Like the old 107% qualifying rule that actually makes no sense whatsoever, you can't have a percentage of time, and 107 isn't a number. But there should be a threshold of interest. If there haven't been X amount of overtakes by lap Y, then there should be Z. The radio channels will all be opened, and there will be a series of general knowledge questions for the drivers. Then there'll be a nominate situation, and Charlie Whiting has to spell out an anagram, or it could appear on the little screen on the dashboard, for two drivers to solve. The loser then has to slow up over the trap door at the start and finish line, and all the team bosses hold out their hands and go, ooh, and a car falls through the trap door. Or they could fix overtaking. Up to you, Formula One. Ball's in your court. I've given you an answer.
I mean, the sad thing is that that's not the stupidest idea that somebody in power at F1 has probably come up with in the past.
It'd be amazing. It was a very bizarre TV show.
So that is it from us. It's goodbye to Phil Tromans.
Goodbye. We have not had time to talk about Pirelli being asked to simplify the tyre names for 2019. The powers that be have had enough of their shit, and they've said, sort it out. It's too complicated. We've got nine different names. None of them make any sense. So next year, apparently, new names for the tyres is going to be much easier to understand.
Ultra, super, very soft.
If they take our idea of just doing hard, medium and soft for any compound, I think we should sue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Terry Saunders.
We also haven't talked about Felipe Massa is going to Formula E, which is just pathetic.
But let's not forget that Formula E is definitely not where old F1 drivers go to see out their careers.
I mean, I reckon
and
Formula
it's scandalous to say otherwise.
I think Formula E are probably lobbying quite hard to get him not to go. It's like, please, please don't.
You should get Maldonado in. He'd be quite fun. Imagine Maldonado in electricity.
Oh, God. What? I'm in the bath again.
What happens if they do a Formula E race at Monaco and they go into the drink?
We'll be back in 2 weeks' time to discuss the Canadian Grand Prix in Montreal. But in the meantime, check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/forF1'sSake, and follow us on Twitter, @forF1'sSake.
And Instagram.
And there's an Instagram, and probably not Snapchat too. And you can buy merchandise from ff1s.com/shop.
And buy some tickets to come and see us live.
Oh, yeah.
If you haven't been completely put off by that past episode that we
Maybe you've had a very big Saturday night out and you want someone to have a nap on a Sunday.
Yeah.
We will see you in a fortnight. I've been Chigres. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.